Attention all business owners. David Nagel here with an important question. Are you tired of struggling with overwhelm, feeling like you can't create a steady income, and dealing with worry and anxiety because you don't have a solid plan? Believe me, I've been there, and no matter what level you're at, these are all symptoms of some larger internal issues at play. If you're ready to figure out what's blocking the success that you know is meant for you, I have the solution that you've been looking for. Join me at the Art of Success Summit on June 26th through 28th, live from the comfort of your own home or office. Now, over these three life-changing days, you'll learn how to overcome your terror barriers, identify your biggest blind spot, and create a plan to get you where you want to go in record time. Don't miss this opportunity to transform your business and your life. Right now, we're offering some really great cashback bonuses and our lowest ticket price, but that will increase very soon. Visit lifeisnowinc.com/summit to secure your spot today. Again, that's lifeisnowinc.com/summit. Hope to see you there. And now on to this episode of the Successful Mind Podcast. Successful people learn how to make their minds work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Great, fantastic. Great to see you. Thanks for doing this with us.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Absolutely. Thanks for having us here. This has been something I've been wanting to do for years.
Yeah, for sure. So the audience has some idea. Why don't you tell them the story that led up to us meeting and what was going on in your life with the whole Amazon deal and all that at the time?
Yeah, well, we had actually met you prior to the whole Amazon thing, but I'll definitely get to that. But you know, we had created a successful business, retail store. We were doing some hotel remodeling. We had actually where the clocks come into play. We had been putting clocks in these hotels, and people that were staying there at these hotels found that these clocks were really useful. They really wanted one, and so they would come into our store and purchase a clock. And at the end of the season, we decided that we didn't want to keep these expensive clocks. We had the store was seasonal, so we didn't want to keep these expensive clocks in our store over the season, the off season. So we put them on Amazon, and they absolutely took off because they're sitting in hotel rooms. They're in a lot of hotels that we visit. You've probably been in some of those hotel rooms on the nightstand. And the brilliance of it was that they were sitting on the nightstand, and someone would go to Amazon and
see, and they would recognize
it. Yeah. So it was brilliant marketing. We didn't have to do anything. So I had these, you know, we'd had these successful businesses going, but really I was a complete ball of nerves and anxiety because I didn't really understand why things were good or bad, or, you know, felt like I would explain it like all the chips were on the table and the craps table, and, you know, roll a seven and everything's going to get pulled away. So
constantly.
Yes. Right. Yes. Always on edge. Just feeling like it would all just go away. And that's kind of funny thinking about it now when I get to the rest of that story. But
if we only knew then what we know now, and obviously you have to go through those times and go through the learning process so that you can grow.
Right.
But we would have had a lot less nerves, quite a bit more success.
But you're correlating, you just realize you have the thought about it all going away and then it actually goes away.
Yeah. Let's get to that. So okay. Let's get to the fun part. We were at the building here for Date with Your Dark Side, which is the program you used to do. And we weren't supposed to be checking our email, but I did one day because I'm a rebel. And
Rebel or neurotic?
Both. It's probably a very thin line.
Yeah, very thin line. I'd go maybe more towards the second one.
Yeah, it's a thin line. And I'd gotten an email from the manufacturer that they weren't going to sell the products to us anymore. And the part of that reason was because Amazon had started competing with us and was undercutting us and them. And basically we were out of business, and that was a 7-figure income stream within 30 days. And,
on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I've mentioned this to you before. We've known a number of people that were just killing it on Amazon. Yeah. And then as soon as Amazon saw what they were doing, they undercut them and they were out of business overnight. Mm-hmm. Gone.
It is crazy. And the manufacturer had asked us if we were selling to Amazon, and we hadn't. So who knows if the product was even the same product, or if they had outsourced it to be, you know, recreated in China and completely different. I don't know. But the manufacturer told us they weren't selling to us. And so that was a significant amount of revenue, obviously, 7 figures each year. And then...
if you notice on Amazon, it's obvious they have a ton of white label product that mimics the brand name, and they're cutting and then they'll market it above whatever you looked up.
Sure.
Right. So
maybe
if you're
at the top.
Yeah. If you're looking up like Fruit of the Loom underwear, they'll have Amazon underwear that looks identical to it for half the price that comes up on top. Right. You didn't even look that up.
Yeah. It's awful to have the people that are helping you build your business then undercut them. But, they're doing okay. Yeah.
Well, that's the competitive model, right?
Right. They're doing okay. So that was really a struggle after, because we were using those funds from that business to fund our other business, which is the vacation rentals management company. And we had, after a while, decided to close the retail store because we were getting a lot of people starting to want us to manage their vacation rental. And so we had salaries, we had, all these software expenses, a lot of expenses that the Amazon business had been funding. So we very quickly lost footing and started taking some of those almost like loan shark payday loans, where they're very expensive and there's a very rapid pay down. Yeah. And
how long did it take you to find out something was wrong with the Amazon thing? Not to backtrack, but I don't know that I've ever asked you that before. Like, what did you notice was wrong? Because you're like, you're killing it. And then one day, what happens that you find out something's wrong?
Well, there was the first thing that started to go wrong was that the manufacturer was not happy that we'd put those on Amazon to begin with. In the beginning, they didn't want to deal with end users. They wanted to deal with hotels only.
Okay.
And I said, well, let me take that business. I'd be happy to, give you another revenue stream. I'll buy from you and I'll put them on Amazon, take care of all that. Well, all of a sudden they started competing with us so we were competing side by side. And then all of a sudden Amazon popped up. And Amazon, if you know anything about Amazon, there's this buy box, and then they call it the buy box, the one that's going to be actually the one that if you click on it, it's going to be the first one there. Yep. And then there's like, and 50 other sellers. So they kept taking that. And every time we would try to lower the price a little bit, they would be one more penny underneath. So, That's where things started to lose, we started to lose our footing and seeing that that was happening, but.
So it crumbled pretty quick.
We fought pretty hard too against when it was just us against the manufacturer. Like we would,
Against you? Like, why would they do that?
I don't know. That's because it wasn't question. Something that they were going to do to begin with.
Right, exactly.
They did not want to be on Amazon. And for a while, I think they were content, except why would you sell it to us at the volume price when you can sell it on Amazon?
Yeah, well,
So I can understand that. But we would lower it by a penny below them. And then you would get an email from the distributor. It's like, don't do that again. Otherwise, we won't sell to you. You know?
Wow.
And then Amazon got in there. And then it was like I say, we couldn't compete, because anytime anybody clicked, add to cart, it was coming from Amazon's inventory rather than ours or the distributors or any other third party sellers. So.
Yeah. And I guess I knew that that was probably a fleeting business. It wasn't going to last forever. Technology doesn't last forever, although they're still doing pretty well, I think, on Amazon. But
it helped in the moment.
Yeah, it did. But it certainly wasn't. I wasn't ready for it to disappear in 30 days.
You talk about how it helped fund our vacation rental business.
Yeah.
I mean, we purchased 3 properties during that time that we used as rentals. So again, that funded the next phase of our business. But once that Amazon business dried up, now we've got these properties with the mortgages and the expenses are brand new and still trying to gain traction rental wise that once the Amazon stream dried up, like now we're faced with a lot of expenses and nothing coming in quite yet. So,
yeah. So, we lost, we had, more, the loans we were having to pay back exorbitant amounts of money in short periods of time, and we just didn't have that cash flow. But we were starting to get behind on some things, and then we started to get to our high season with vacation rentals, and we thought, okay, well, we made it thus far. We've made it to the high season, but then March of 2020 occurred, and all of a sudden COVID, all of our bookings went away. And it was a really, really scary time.
Sure.
It was terrifying. And I remember just looking up at the sky being like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what is going on here? And really just being absolutely terrified. And it's funny because I would listen to these types of podcasts. Like, you had Arjun on, you had Angelique on, and you had all these people on, and I would listen to their stories, hearing where they came from and wanting to, like, I was said, this is a story I'm going to tell from stages someday. And I'm actually getting goosebumps talking about that. But seriously, that was what got me through, because there was really nothing we could do. We had applied for all these SBA loans. We couldn't get any more credit cards. We were already on credit card plans, and we had to cancel all of our cards just to be able to be on those plans. We were working with a company called Corporate Turnaround that helped us to renegotiate all of the loans, and we write off some of it and get on better payment plans. And it's actually funny because we were private coaching during part of that period. And you said, this is going to turn around for you in 7 days. And in that 7 days, I got a postcard from Corporate Turnarounds, which is kind of funny that the same word there. And anyway, I just had to surrender, and there was nothing else we could do. Like, we couldn't find a job. We couldn't.
There was nothing.
Nothing. There were
thousands of businesses out, all over the country overnight.
And we had, we always said, well, if we ever need to, we can go bartend. We could go work at restaurants.
Restaurants
are all gone, all closed.
Right.
And
do a meat raffle in Wisconsin.
Yeah, meat raffle. We're going to all go to a meat raffle sometime. Let's do one here. We'll do one here.
We'll flood the office.
There you go. And so when that moment of surrender really happened, that's when things started to turn around. And those loans that we had been denied for from the SBA, all of a sudden during COVID, they're handing out loans left and right.
Yeah.
And so we were getting the loans we needed. Our mortgage that was almost, we were able to keep it up, but we almost were going to be behind with it. And we were able to put that in forbearance and have no repercussions at all with our credit history or anything like that. And grants were being handed out. And so we started to see the things coming in because there was nothing else we could, there was nothing else we could do. We really had to just have faith. And then COVID really, really accelerated our business. And
because it started dumping all that cash, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just you guys getting cash, but other people were getting cash.
Right. And people were starting to go to vacation rentals instead of hotels. They still wanted a vacation, but they weren't getting on airplanes or they weren't getting on right. cruise ships or going to Europe.
And I mean, what the perfect business to be in, yeah. right? Social distancing,
right.
your way, absolutely. You get to go to another place. There's nobody there. You don't yes. have to deal with anybody.
Yes. You have your own kitchen and yeah.
Big enough properties that, you know, you can get the whole family, extended family with, right. you know, 10, 12, 15 people, or you can get two families together if they trusted, like,
sure.
being yeah. comfortable being yeah. in that situation.
Your own people.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had, and people were starting to buy vacation rentals because they saw that you could go work remotely somewhere and have this place pay for itself when you weren't staying there. And so we really had a big influx of business. And I think that was one of the biggest moments of one of my favorite phrases of yours is God is good all the time. And that has been so true for us, because who would have thought that COVID was going to, first of all, come there. And then for us to go from thinking that we were losing everything to propelling way forward. And other times we've had where we've gotten sued and we won the case and the lawyer that represented us ended up buying a property from us that we're going to manage. And then we had a cease and desist letter and the connections that come from all these different things that I think are not good at the time. And they end up being the best good. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't necessarily know at the moment why it's good. And going into gratitude has been sometimes hard to do, but I know that things are good. This is happening for a reason to help propel me forward. I just don't necessarily know why at this moment.
We were actually in Florida when we got the cease and desist letter. And obviously it's the first cease and desist letter that we've gotten as business owners. And it was such a punch to the gut and completely took the wind out of us. Like, what are we going to do? We have no idea how we're going to get through this. We've never seen this before. And incidentally, the lawyer who authored that letter subsequently had a property in Door County that he brought us on to manage.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure he ever even knew.
He hired us, the guy who basically.
He didn't even realize who you were.
I'm not sure he did.
I don't know.
Really? That's interesting, right?
And within, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, and then within 2 years?
Yeah.
Maybe a 2 year span yeah. there that happened.
We actually ended up firing him because he was not the best owner to manage for. But it was quite funny that.
Bit of a control issue.
Right.
Yeah. With a lot of things. So.
Yeah. But these things, the people that have left the organization, we've had other, you know, great, even better people come along. And it's just really recognizing that these things are all here for us. This is all happening for us, yeah. not to us.
And one more thing before we get off of it, heading into COVID, January of 20, before COVID actually became a thing, we had two of our employees quit. And one was going to go back to her corporate job because they had made her an offer that was more than we would be able to do, plus benefits, plus whatever. And another one who was doing marketing for us left. So within a 2 week span, we lost two employees, which you were just a wreck thinking about that. And so we were going to go into the season, especially as COVID became a thing and the lockdowns started coming and the uncertainty. Basically, we had to look at each other and say, we've got to run the ship here pretty much by ourselves, aside from like our cleaning manager and her staff that are on the ground and in the properties. The day to day of the business was basically going to be us. And we didn't hire anybody until well into COVID. And again, it was busy those summer months because people were going to the vacation rentals. So
and that was another thing that was good because they left. I would have had to lay them off because there's no way I would have been able to afford them during that time, at least in my negative thinking.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing that's interesting was watching just human behavior, because when the government started cashing those checks, people started spending them.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't like they were like, well, maybe we better take this money and put it aside in case it gets really bad or worse than it is or whatever. Like, they started going out and having fun with that money. So it was just like human psychology, right? You think here we are in the middle of the worst crisis we've ever seen in the world. We don't know where this is going or this is going to come out. Maybe I better hang on to something.
Get some more toilet paper.
Get some more. Exactly. Yeah. But that's not the case. They go out and they.
That summer was the worst behavior we had from our rental guests that we've ever seen. And it was,
was it destructive?
There was destructive, not like a couple of properties were pretty bad, but nothing like completely trashed.
Yeah. Door County destructive, but, which is very different than,
I mean, it wasn't, you know,
it's not Portland.
Nothing was lit on fire.
New York.
Right.
From what we had seen prior to that, it was, you know, kitchen tables broken or, you know, there was
people, we had like our first drug party and that first and only, so people were just
like a lot of energy.
They really
did.
Yeah. And
it was a challenging time for sure.
So bring us up to date with, remember when you came up to me and you guys were thinking about going to buying a house in Florida? Tell everybody that story.
Oh, yeah. So,
when did that come about? When did the
so I think in about 2015, this is kind of how I remember it. In 2015, after being married for 5 years and knowing you for about 15, she says, Scott, it's always been my lifelong dream to live in Florida.
Bait and switch.
Really? Okay, this is the first time hearing about it. Maybe she said, you know, I really now decided I want to live in Florida. I don't know. I was in a lot of resistance and, I can look back at it now and pinpoint like, okay, that was pure confusion. Like my mind is going crazy, trying to come up with these excuses about why I don't want to move to Florida. And, we probably argued maybe that was like a 2 year, maybe more.
Yeah.
Of you pretty consistently saying, let's do this, let's do that. Initially, we started by doing like a little snowbird thing. So we'd take 4 weeks, 5 weeks in the winter.
Go down there.
Yeah. Go down there. And I remember the first time she booked a place, like September before that winter, you said, well, I'm looking at this place for 5 or 6 weeks. Well, what's the price? Well, that's too much. So that was my first line of resistance there. And then it was, you know, I got so uptight about, well, you can't take the kids out of school. Like the kids need to be in school. They're going to get yelled at if they don't go to school. Yeah, right. You know?
Right.
And so that was the second
classic
thing.
Classic Midwest thinking.
So then she calls, right? And then she calls the principal. Well, you know, we're thinking about taking the girls out. Okay. Well, I'll talk to the teachers. We'll put the curriculum together for your time. I'm like, what? Okay.
The school has a lot of Packer player kids and they come and go. They have to just.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But, so, you know, small town sort of Wisconsin thinking, like I never thought anybody would or could do that. And so we got that first month down here.
Then we bought a house and then we built a house as a vacation home.
Yeah. I was still thinking like, let's just kind of keep this as snowbird. Let's just do snowbird for a while. And she was still full bore on coming down here full time. And so
that went on for about another year. In the car one day, he's like, well, this is going to come to a head. So I'm like, okay.
Well, that wasn't the first time. It came to a head like, a couple of times. Yeah.
And so I said, okay. So it was pretty close to like, okay, well, I want to go. I'm going to go. And so we were having those discussions and he decided that you were hopefully his saving. You were going to save him by telling him.
That's when you approached me about the issue, right?
So I had fought it. I had put everything into the fight I could. You know, I came up with every excuse I could think of, and I didn't have anything else to stand on. And I said, you know what? I thought about this a lot before I told her. I said, listen, I'm going to get some clarity from David. I said this in my mind. If David says that that's where we should go, if that's what we should do, I'm not going to argue with it anymore. I'm going to go with it and we'll move down to Florida. And so we came to whatever the event was and we asked you. And, you know, a couple of the things that you said, I'll never forget, you know, it was, why the fuck would you want to raise your kids in Wisconsin?
Well, that was the second, that was the second day. Cause the first day you had said, basically I had said, you know, we were looking to start the business down in Florida or run the business. And you had said something like, or what he interpreted as, I don't have to go. And I heard it as, it would be a lot easier if you did, and something along those lines. And so on the way home from that day, we got into a big argument in the car.
So the next day we asked you for clarification. Yeah. It was spelled out pretty simply. And that was September of 18. Then we moved in. The next time we were down here was in 2019, and we just moved in March. And you were proud, got up to the microphone, said, David, we moved to Florida. And you said, what took you so long?
And she's like, it takes a little while to get, you know, pack up a house and move a family down. And
yeah, but the idea was you did all this before the COVID thing.
Yes.
We had almost a full year. Before COVID hit. So we had a real normal, good first year. And not that COVID was bad down there. I mean, it's what it was for a lot of people. It was probably really a little bit better for us.
For us down there. It was a lot.
In terms of what was closed and open. Oh.
That was one of those moments where he had, he put his entire trust in whatever you said. And thank God you said move to Florida. Or you said that it would probably be good to move to Florida because you wouldn't raise your kids here.
Didn't you tell me that when I talked to both of you the first time, you both walked away with me hearing us, you heard me say different things.
Yeah, so I think I had heard something along the lines of, you wouldn't need to move to Florida, but you should. And I think what I tried to say to her in the car was, well, he said we don't need to, we should, but it's not like need being necessity and absolute. And it was more so like kind of like, half-assed comment, you know, like kind of ribbing her a little bit. And then and before we got to the hotel, like as we're ready to split again, you know, it's like we're fighting. So we definitely heard it a little bit different. But the funny part was, like, regardless of what I said, like I knew we were going to move down. It's just
a matter of when.
Yeah. And even with the girls, you know, they were in the third grade and the fifth grade at the time. And so we announced in September that we were going to be moving to Florida, and they were just absolutely defined. Well, I'm not moving to Florida. I'm not leaving Wisconsin. As we got,
that's what everybody from Wisconsin
closer and closer, the Midwest. They picked it up from somewhere, didn't they?
Yeah, for sure. It is the hardest place to get out of if you're raised there. It's like a cult, you know, like the casserole cult or something, right? So it's
meat. A meat raffle, boot, or a deer camp, you know, we still go back. We still love our roots. We do have a house there. We have our business there.
Yeah, no, it's fun.
We run it from Florida, our business, and we do go back and we do really enjoy our time there, but we do it in small doses and we definitely notice a different mindset. And not that I'm wanting to be judgmental of that. I'm not. It's just that what we were trying to do with our business and grow ourselves, and that's just not happening a lot.
Right.
In where we were. And so we needed to surround ourselves with some more of
different individuals. Yeah. It's a different environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different environment.
And until you get out and can kind of take a step back and look in at it from the outside.
Right.
I had a friend who moved away after college, and every time he would come back at the holidays, I think it's before I met you even, when are you moving back home? When are you going to move back home? You know, and all of a sudden 2-3 years later, I'm still asking him, when are you moving back home? Dude, I live out here now.
Yeah. Home's not here anymore.
I'm not moving back to Green Bay.
Yeah.
And so And that, I remember it, like it kind of caught me off guard. I didn't know what to make of that. Like, well, we always go out and drink together. What are we going to do?
Right. You
know?
Yeah.
Who am I going to hang out with anymore? You know?
Exactly.
Gotta find somebody else.
Exactly.
Gotta find Wendy.
Yeah. Gotta find Wendy.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So after COVID, like, how's your business grown? How did you do after that?
Oh my gosh. So we had, that year that we lost the Amazon business,
yeah.
We were at about $295,000 in revenue, which sounds like a significant amount. And for a lot of people that is, but we also, our expenses.
And what year was that?
That was in 2019.
2019, right before it hit,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And so we were in the hole. Like, our expenses were way above that. And so we put our retirement fund into it. We maxed our credit cards. We were all in. There was no other choice. And then that next year, I believe we were about $995,000. And then I believe it went to over $2 million, $4 million. And now we haven't got our numbers finalized, but it's over $5 million for 2023. And it's been, and we're also this with, you know, a lot of other industries facing some headwinds with the industry changing and people
right.
starting to vacation other places. But our business has continued to grow even with what we're experiencing. And that is, so impactful based on the thinking and the mindset that I've been learning from you and the team. And there's so many things that have happened to us that could have just crumbled us. And we've instead just, you know, picked ourselves up, dusted ourselves off and kept going. And as a result, we've been able, you know, we've got four properties, three vacation properties and one of our dream house in Florida on not on the water, like the beach water, but
yeah.
on a beautiful pond with pool and everything. I remember when we had conversations during the weekly huddle saying, I don't know how we're going to be able to get this house. The mortgage company is telling us no. And here we have the house. And
house is being built.
Yeah, several other. We have that's happened in a couple other properties too. And we've got our dream car, go on nice vacations, things that just did not feel possible.
Yeah.
A few years ago.
Yeah.
And the great thing that has happened recently is that one of my dreams was to actually put a CEO in place in the business to run it so that we could just focus on the fun stuff that we want to do in the business.
Sure.
And maybe do some other things. And so we put a CEO in place now who's hit the ground running. I'm still somewhat involved just because it's still fairly new, but Scott is mostly out of the business. So we're, retired and semi-retired, but there's just a lot of spaciousness now to decide what do we want to do next, and not have to make any decision from money related thing. Like,
yeah. And didn't you win an award for one of the fastest growing companies?
Yes, thank you. I forgot about that. We did. We got ranked number 292 of the Inc. 5,000 fastest growing private companies
nice.
In America this year. Yeah. And that is just, it's mind blowing because to see how close it felt like we were to losing everything to springing so far the other direction. And I, we had a huddle yesterday. I am not perfect. I still have plenty of work to do.
Sure.
Plenty of mindset things that there's a lot of that stuff's really ingrained in there. So this is ongoing work. It's not something you can do once and call it quits.
It's an onion of
layers and layers.
No, it's a lifelong, like, you have to decide, like, this is a practice for life, right? Retraining yourself to think to, and it's not just like, I'm going to think different. It's viewing the world different. It's making decisions based on problems and real time issues to do things that seem completely out of the norm for most people, especially like if you come from the Midwest, because it's always like you've got to save all your money and do this. And then maybe someday, you know, if you have the cash, you could do those things.
Yeah.
And this is about making the decision first and everything else follows
100%. That decision. And I, you know, I was a big Dave Ramsey follower and, you know, I'm not knocking him. He was a blessing to many and to us for a lot of years, but also I had to undo.
You had to undo all of it.
All of it. Yeah. And I still have to undo it because everyone outside of the circle that we are in here and, you know, a few other circles that are of similar mindset, we're going against every teaching.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, like nothing against him, but his teachings are for people that are on a fixed income and they'll never be anything different.
And don't know how to get
they don't know how to more earn than, any more money, right? They're on a fixed income. So you're managing the very little that you have and you have to try to do the best. And you're up against time, your life.
Right.
Right? So it's different. It's totally different philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, using credit and debt and like is a sin almost with that teacher.
100%.
And so that has been a lot of
credit and debt's one of the most useful tools. If you do it responsibly and you're thinking about what it is that you're doing, it's a fantastic tool that we didn't have not that long ago, you know, that most people have the ability to do. And when you don't know what you're doing with it, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble like I did, you know, in my early 20s. Yeah. I had no idea what I was doing. And, you know,
we wouldn't have been able to do the Amazon business if we didn't leverage credit card debt.
Right.
And I mean, I remember the first time we ordered, you know, we put in a significant order and it was
like 25, 30,000
on a credit card. And like before she hits click, are we really going to do this? We wouldn't have been able to make it as far as we did with that stream of income had we not learned how to use that. And then, like I say, we pulled out 401k money,
right?
Put that back
in. And then they just try to talk your head off about not making that decision when you do it.
See, we had a good guy that said, if you know you can put the money back in, it's got to be within 60 days or whatever. And he went through the rules with us. And he said, yeah, look, I can see what you guys are going to use this for. This is a good decision. This is a good way to leverage that.
Well, and when we pulled the money out for good, because we did borrow it.
And then
eventually he said, if you think you can make more returns putting this in your business and a lot of people can, he's like, yeah, go ahead. You know, or he's like, then that's a good idea, smart idea. But, you know, I think about when in terms of debt, the amount of debt we have is staggering. If I look at it, but I also know that's not going to take very long. If I, you know, it's like a couple years if I just put it all, you know, towards it. And and I don't want to do that because some of those loans are what, 3% interest. I'm never going to pay that back until I have to, because what I can make instead of paying out I can pay out 3% and keep that money in house and make 20% or whatever on it in return. And there's business owners everywhere are using debt, or, you know, they are getting capital from raising or
there's
having
not
bonds.
There's not a starting business that doesn't have to. Either a small business owner is going to bootstrap like we did, right, when we started, or you're going to have somebody that they're going to look for investors. They come up with an idea and they're going to have investors.
Right.
There is no business that doesn't start with debt, unless you're talking about somebody who's starting a second business and they got a pile of cash and they're moving it from that direction. But the way most people think about it is, I can't go into debt to do something like that. What if it fails? Right. Mm-hmm. So all of the programming that they have in their mind is designed to keep them where they are. And they're so blinded by that fear of what if it fails, that they don't realize that their life is failing because of it. They're not really living. Every decision is about playing it safe. It's horrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And, you know, I appreciate your teachings on debt, because that really was a reframe that helped us. And if we hadn't taken the debt we have, and we know we'll be able to pay it back, and we are paying it back, and we would not be where we are.
Yeah.
And have a business as large as it is. And there's just so much shame out there about it. And I still have to struggle with it. And you have to coach me out at times. It's like, you know, it's in there deep. It does surface, but I have to just keep reminding myself that this is how we're building our business.
Right.
And we're using other people's money to build it.
And, right. and as you do it, you're adding to the life of everybody that you touch with every dollar that you spend, with every investment that you make, with every property that you buy. It takes people to manage it, to cut the grass, to paint it, to build it, to take care of it, all of that stuff, right? So you're adding to life with every single thing that you're doing by doing that.
Absolutely.
Right? When you take that little bit of money and you put it in a savings account someplace because you're scared to death to try to do anything else, you haven't really even added to your life. You're hoping that at 65 or 75, you have enough to be able to make it with Social Security and maybe your military pension or whatever it is that you've got. And people wake up every day and they find out they don't have enough. They don't have enough to live to the rest of their life.
Yeah, that's.
And they have to downsize, you know, to basically nothing. They may have had a decent middle class lifestyle at one point, and then they're living in some rundown apartment somewhere because somebody has to take care of them, you know, like a kid or something like that.
Right.
So where are you going next? So you got this CEO.
Yeah.
You got you're freed up. You got some positive income coming in.
Yeah.
You got the beautiful house in Florida. You got the properties up in Wisconsin. What's next?
So we are deciding that. We actually have the space to make that decision. I have some ideas about some travel related business. I do some business coaching and also wanting to do some philanthropy, but also just really have the space to do exactly what we want, do the traveling and things like that. I thought at one time, and he was like, you're not going to sit on a beach with a margarita. And I was like, David, I want to sit on the beach with a margarita. But
if there's somebody who could actually enjoy that longer than you think she could, it would be her.
Yeah.
She would give you a run for your money.
I think you knew that I can't sit still long enough for that. But I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, and I'm allowing that to come into my brain. And one of the other things with, you know, going from a retirement standpoint is our business is our retirement plan. We're building it. It's not just running without us. It's growing without us, and we're looking to build it to a point where hopefully we can sell it.
So just always remember this. There's no better income generator for retirement than a business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That like you, there's no place where you can invest your money and dollar for dollar make the equivalent income back that you want than a business. You're never going to find an investment out there in the world that'll touch it. That is if a person has the chops to be able to do it and they're willing to take a few years and just learn and learn their mindset and a few business principles, they could set themselves up for life with some solid businesses and have a positive cash flow forever.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether that business is going to be continuously run and we're not in it at all and just letting it run and goes forever, or if we end up selling it at some point to someone else, either way is our retirement plan.
Yeah.
That it'll
awesome.
It'll bring us the income we want.
That's fantastic. Well, congratulations to both of you.
Thank you. And we thank you so much for helping us on this journey. And it's not always been easy. And thank God you're here, because I don't know that we would be able to have made it through some of these things without your help.
My pleasure. I had the same kind of help. So we awesome. All need it. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind podcast. If you like what you heard and you want to learn more, go to lifeisnowinc.com. I'll see you next week.